Providence is a city that's trying to attract young people to live and work. And for many young professionals, quality of life is really important. Transportation is a big part of it, and many want a green commute. One of the greenest ways to commute is on two wheels, bicycling. Rhode Island, it has a history of treating it solely as a recreational activity, but is it more than that? Could it be the key to an economic renaissance? Can Providence become a bicycle-friendly city? Or is such an endeavor a waste of time and taxpayer dollars? We'll explore this and more during our Policy in Peno Bicycling Toward an Urban Renaissance. It's Rhode Island Public Radio's ongoing discussion of top state issues. I'm Bradley Campbell, and we're recording in front of a great audience tonight at the Providence Athenaeum. So I guess the best place to start is with someone who bicycles on the streets every day. Matt Moritz is the board president for Rhode Island Bicycle Coalition. It's an organization that promotes bicycling as a healthy, efficient, and environmentally friendly way to get around town. Matt Moritz pedals year-round to work, and he even pedaled across town to this interview. So Matt, thanks so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you for having me.
So a couple weeks ago, Matt, you gave me a tour of Providence at rush hour on a bicycle. We pedaled alongside traffic, around potholes, near zooming buses. Now, Matt, I want you to describe for our listeners our ride back into town from the west side on the new bicycle lane, Broadway Street.
Yeah, so we had done a little exploring, ended up on Elmwood, cut back across from the south side to the west end, or west side, and turned right onto Broadway Street. And the first thing you notice when you turn onto Broadway and get in that bike lane is you're lined up perfectly to look at downtown. And the first thing you see, really, if you look up away from the street, is the Superman building, Industrial Trust Tower, I think it's properly called. And it's a great vision. And you're driving a car, you don't normally get to see and take the time to look at what's around you in the same way. You can see and engage with the businesses, the Columbus Theater, Dash Bicycle. You're riding down Broadway. The lights are nicely sequenced, and you can see the bike detector loops for the traffic lights all the way down that. You've got a great first-class experience all the way down Broadway until you reach Dean Street. And then you're just about to enter downtown, and the bike lane disappears, and you're at a really busy intersection. There's no lane markings. You're looking at a overpass over I-95, which is 4-lane wide, entering another busy intersection, which serves as a service road and highway on-ramp to I-95 north, and you kind of feel abandoned at that point. It's crossable, but just there's no indication of where you should be and what the safest path is through all of it.
So is this kind of representative of what bicycling is like in Providence?
By and large, no. There are lots of quiet streets that you can use, but for a lot of times you're going places in the city. We have a really radially designed city, so you're going to end up on a busier, larger roadway with higher traffic volumes, perhaps higher speeds. Broadway is a great example of a street that used to move very quickly and not really have much lane guidance, and with the addition of bike lanes, it's certainly become a lot more civil. Same things can be said of the Blackstone Boulevard. But at the same time, Broad Street is a very high-volume street. But as we were exploring it at rush hour, traffic volume is so high and there's so many traffic lights that it's so low speed that it's actually not that uncomfortable of a place to ride. In fact, you're waiting for the cars to get out of your way as much as you're waiting to, you're not being whizzed by as you would be on any other place or time.
So, Matt, how easy is it to move throughout the city?
Very easy. I mean, we have the advantage of we have a very small, compact city that is really easy to get around. You can get from the east side to the west side in 20, 25 minutes on a bike.
So when someone calls you, say you're on Hope Street, and they're like, hey, we're at the Hot Club.
Yeah, sure. Or, keep going further. Going to go to the Avery or E&O or Scurvy Dog. Keep going.
What about in terms of cyclists? So you bicycle to work every day. What about how many cyclists do you pass on a given day?
So that's a key indicator. Is I don't generally see many other riders. It's actually an event for me if I see two or three other people cycling at the same time I am. My path goes from the east side to Valley Street in Mount Pleasant, in between Mount Pleasant and Olneyville. And I tend to avoid the major streets, but like I said, it's an event if I see somebody else out there at 7 a.m.
So it's almost like you're this lone wolf braving the elements.
Well, I don't feel that way. I just feel like I'm just a guy trying to get to work.
Matt, I got to ask the question, why? Like, why do you do this when you could just easily take a car or just ride the bus?
I choose not to use the car because I feel like it's an unnecessary expense. And I choose not to use the bus because it takes longer. In my particular case, it would be it's a 40 or 45 minute journey, largely because I have to make a transfer at Kennedy Plaza, which is anywhere from 10 to 15 minutes, you know, to make a trip that would take me 20 to 25 minutes on a normal day on the bicycle.
What do you experience as you're riding?
Oh, cherry blossoms, first ray of sun coming over the hill on the east side, watching people get to the train station on time for the commuter rail.
Well, some of your perspective is echoed in the thoughts of someone who knows plenty about cycling. He's the mayor of Minneapolis, R.T. Rybeck. Now, Bicycling Magazine, it considers Minneapolis one of the top two cities in the U.S. for cycling. And Mayor Rybeck says that when he rides through the city, he remembers the words of someone with ties to our backyard.
One of my idols on biking is somebody who got a lot of background in Providence. It was David Byrne of Talking Heads. And after leaving RISD and becoming a great musician, he wrote a book called Bicycle Diaries. And it was really about biking through cities in America. What was important about it was it wasn't really about biking. It was about experiencing community at a bike level, which is so radically different than how we experience it from the car. But if you really connect more with the community, you see a lot more and you grow a different kind of community.
Okay, we've got David Byrne, Talking Heads, experiencing a community at a bike level. Matt, what do you make of that?
I think he's got it exactly right. I mean, this is something, you know, David Byrne has said it. Many other people have said the same thing. People on bicycles engage with what's around them at a much higher level than people that are driving cars. Generally, if you're in a car, you're getting from point A to point B. You've got a lot of things to be focused on to operate the vehicle safely. You don't have time to, look up and say, oh, look, there's a new shop going in that I want to check that out in 20 minutes or to see somebody out in a stylish outfit.
You're listening to Rhode Island Public Radio's special broadcast of Policy and Pino, Bicycling Toward an Urban Renaissance. I'm Bradley Campbell. I'm talking with the board president of the Rhode Island Bicycle Coalition, Matt Moritz. A few weeks back, Matt and I rode through rush hour in Providence on a bicycle. Matt, again and again during our trip, we ran into routes that just spit a cyclist out into these large intersections with heavy traffic. You know, out there, it's like I almost felt like a pioneer running into a river. You're seeing the destination. It's just a stone's throw away, but you don't really know how or if you even want to cross it. And honestly, Matt, at times, I didn't feel safe.
Okay.
And so I want to get down to it. You know, Matt, as the board president of Rhode Island Bicycle Coalition, what are the biggest problems facing cyclists who want to get around?
The biggest one, you've hit it right on the head, is a lot of people, when they're considering whether or not to get on a bicycle, is where am I going to ride and will I feel safe there? That's a really hard conversation to have. I mean, it comes with practice. I certainly didn't 5 years ago when I started commuting by bicycle. I didn't, immediately jump on Broad Street in Providence or Warwick Ave in Warwick and go riding. I was not comfortable. Even now, I don't always feel comfortable to hop on North Main or Canal Street. Those are, very high volume streets. The thing to do is you think about your rides differently. You look for the side streets that are quieter, neighborhood streets. On the east side, it's easy. It's, very grid.
What do you think needs to happen from the perspective of a cyclist to make it better?
Bike lanes certainly make people feel or allow people a space to feel more comfortable. So Broadway certainly is a great example, and we see people using that all the time now. Same with Blackstone Boulevard.
What about education?
Education is a huge thing. I'm a certified instructor for a smart cycling program, which endeavors to teach people how to ride in traffic, how to operate their vehicle, how to operate their bicycle like it's a vehicle, which is what law tells us to do. And when you do it the right way, it's amazing how much more space you're given on the road. If you're not hovering in, within a foot of the curb, you know, people tend to squeeze you and are zooming by very closely, and you start feeling really tense and nervous, and that actually increases your chance of making a mistake that puts you in danger. Whereas if you start riding, you know, in a safer way, you're out in the lane where people can see you, they'll actually give you a wide berth and not, you know, pass within inches of you most of the time.
Most of the time. Matt, one thing. Do you just want all of this, all these new bike lanes, you know, better education? Do you just want this to make your ride to work better? or is there something bigger?
I think it's something bigger. I would love to see more people riding just because I'm tired of being a little bit abnormal. It's a transportation option. And, you know, there's a lot of people that can't afford or to do anything more expensive, such as, you know, vehicle operation.
But it seems like there's something even bigger than that based on a new study that you say that just came out of New York.
So there's a lot of data being collected in some new studies. The biggest one is in New York. They've been studying the changes since they put in bike lanes. And I just reviewed it this morning. It was 49% increase in total receipts for businesses on 9th Ave, where the bike lane was, compared to 3% for the entire borough of Manhattan for the same time period.
It's food for thought. Well, we're going to take a break here. Matt Moritz, president of the Rhode Island Bicycle Coalition, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Now, coming up, we'll hear from a downtown developer who says bicycling is much more than bike lanes. He says it could be the key to economic growth. We'll ask why. You're listening to a special broadcast of Policy and Pino, Bicycling Toward an Urban Renaissance. It's recorded in front of a beautiful audience here at the Providence Athenaeum. I'm Bradley Campbell. Keep listening. I've got to the bike here, gonna ride it if you like it. Go to the bus, sit to the bell and bridge and things to make it look good. I'd give it to you if I could, but I borrowed it. Welcome back to a special broadcast of Policy and Pino, Bicycling Toward an Urban Renaissance. We're recording in front of a great audience here at the Providence Athenaeum. I'm Bradley Campbell. In the last segment, we talked about bicycling. Now it's on to the Renaissance. Joining us is the Senior Associate and Director of Development with the real estate company Cornish Associates, Mr. Steve Durkee. In the last 20 years, Steve has put his money and his mind behind the growth of our capital city. He's a major player behind the redevelopment of Westminster Street, the first headquarters of AS220, and Trinity Rep's Pell Chafee Center. And one of his latest endeavors is a new bar downtown called The Eddie. Steve, thanks for that, and also thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Bradley. Glad to be here.
So, Steve, what are you trying to do downtown?
Well, we've been working on the revitalization of downtown Providence for about 20 years, and I work with my colleague Buff Chase, whose vision this was, and so we believe that there is a new population that is demanding this type of living and space, living space and places to work and play, and they're young. They're that 24 to 35 year old population, and they like to ride bikes. They also like to walk, and we know that national studies say that car ownership by that population is down 40% from every other population. So we know that there's a demand for this type of thing. And when you asked me about this panel, I was very excited because I think that it's about not only attracting just cyclists, but its entire population who accept the pedestrian, cycling, and alternative forms of transportation versus a car.
So, what's the overall goal? Like, what are some set examples of what you're actually, you know, you're going toward?
Again, I think what we'd like to say is that we don't have enough housing. We are proposing that there be another 1,000 units of housing in downtown over the next 5 years that would be affordable for populations that that are just starting out in their jobs. We know that there's an amazing opportunity just south of the downtown, which is the 195 land, and that is targeted to be part of the knowledge district, the knowledge economy. Those workers will very likely would love to live in downtown, I think. We know that that population is very interested in that kind of space. So I think that's what our goal is to just increase the opportunities for people to be in that environment.
Now, you mentioned this earlier, but I want you to expand on it. Just sure. How do bicycles play a part in this overall goal?
Well, you know, I went to RISD a number of years ago, and I lived on the west side, and it was very different than it is today. And I biked over to RISD every day, and I discovered things that you would probably never have discovered otherwise, like Cathedral Square. If you've never been to Cathedral Square, you would never go there in a car. You can't get there in a car. So, so I think we see the cycling and really the pedestrian opportunities as being working very hard to help improve those. One of the initiatives is Kennedy Plaza, and you may or may not have heard about what's happening there, but by next June, it's going to be an entirely different place focused on a really enhanced pedestrian experience. The buses will be reduced substantially, the bus traffic, the volume. So we believe that the pedestrian and the cycling is just an important part of this growth pattern.
We are working, though, with the real fact that cars are dominant means of transportation in Providence. Why even push for bicycles? You know, why don't we get more parking spots for cars?
Well, because I think that it's so obvious everywhere you look that cycling and pedestrian activity and public transit are clearly a preferred mode in our next generation. And we want to support that. I mean, I had gone to Montreal, and if you haven't been to Montreal, you've got to go and see what they do with bicycles up there. It is just stunning. And for 4 days, I rode a bike and ate my way across that city. And it was fantastic. And I would like to see, I mean, Broadway was brought up earlier, and I was on Broadway today. And Broadway is fantastic. It feels like a really progressive road in terms of how it, you know, the bicycling is so clearly marked. I'd like to see the same thing on North Main Street from Pawtucket into downtown. And I've actually driven it and laid it out how we could maybe do that. A dedicated bike lane. RIPTA's doing their thing. I'm on the board of RIPTA. So we're talking about these types of issues right now. And I think we need to give a lot more attention to the dedicated lanes, whether they're painted or physically separated. But that is really makes a statement about how we feel about bicycling as a city.
We just heard about a study in New York City that showed bicycling contributing to a bump in business revenue. I'm curious to know what evidence you have that shows cycling and urban living actually contributing to a better business climate.
I'm not sure I have any really empirical data, but you have anecdotal stories about how people really are attracted to an environment or a place or a city because of the attitude. I mean, I've had many friends in Olneyville over the years, and if you remember, Olneyville was really the epicenter of the bike crowd 10 or 15 years ago, and not only were they biking often and everywhere, but they had some really crazy bikes, but you could see it start to grow. And how many bike shops do we have now? There's a couple of my friends here who own bike shops, and those weren't here a few years ago. So there's clearly an interest in a small growing economy around cycling, and whether it's contributing to existing business or creating new business, I think they all matter.
You mentioned Olneyville. The executive director of Recycle a Bike, Jenny Yu, mentioned that 40% of the residents who live in the Olneyville neighborhood do not own a car. Now, she said that it's important to think beyond the people who live downtown and in university neighborhoods. And so her organization, it pairs a lot of times new immigrants with bicycles. And that's why Jenny Yu thinks of bikes in this way.
A bicycle offers a new immigrant or refugee to Providence a means of getting work. I mean, these are people who are coming from very difficult situations most of the time. And when they get here, they don't speak the language. They don't have the community that they're used to around them. And to have a bicycle as a means of interviewing for jobs is really important.
Steve, what do you think of that?
I think it's absolutely true. And it's remarkably affordable. And people say, well, you can't ride in the winter. But if you go to places where cycling is popular, you'll see that people ride in the winter all the time. But I think that's absolutely true, that, you know, people, it opens greater opportunities to get around for people of lower income, for sure.
And lower-income folks, what I guess when we're thinking about this, who are the people? What are the people that you're trying to attract downtown to these various neighborhoods?
Well, I think whether they're new citizens here, whether they're college graduates, they're generally younger people. I'd like to see Providence become the premier biking city in New England, for sure. I mean, I don't see why we can't do that. Boston's doing a good job, but I don't see why we can't do that here. There's enough interest in it. And it's a growing interest, so we just need to capitalize on that.
You're listening to Rhode Island Public Radio's special broadcast of Policy and Pino, Bicycling Toward an Urban Renaissance. I'm talking with developer Steve Durkee of Cornish Associates. He's behind much of the hot spots in downtown Providence, Westminster Street, AS220, the Trinity Reps Pell Chafee Center. Steve, you know, there seems to be this field of dreams mentality in the bicycling world, this if you build it, they will come sort of thing. It, of course, being bicycle infrastructure, they being young professionals, a creative class. In your experience, how true is this?
I think it's very true. I mean, you know, we have a lot of young people in this city who come here to go to college. And I think you see a lot of, if you go over to RISD, where I went to college, and the architecture building, you'll see 100 bikes out there chained up to the fence. It's fascinating. We're about to build, I don't know how many miles of new roads, but over the next 2 years, you're going to watch in downtown Providence all the new roads for 195 being constructed, a lot of new roads being, or existing roads being reshaped by the city of Providence. And cycling has been a big part of that conversation. So we'll see. Some, you know, I'm not sure that we were as thoroughly as successful as we want, but we certainly made some progress in making them more bike friendly.
What sort of cycling infrastructure would you like to see?
Well, like I said, I think a huge statement to the world is if you can make dedicated bike lanes, whether painted or physical barriers. When you have a dedicated bike lane that you feel safe, you're not in the same roadbed as the traffic, it's a very different experience. And I don't mean an East Bay bike path. I mean something that's part of the road system but isolated. And we've got there's people that don't really necessarily buy into that idea, and maybe some old thinking about this, that the car still has the right of way. I don't want to shout out too much to my friend Drake, but you know, we've all been following this thing with Cluck. And that kind of thinking we have to get over that, you know.
So all of these ideas, though, that you mentioned, having these dedicated bike lanes that people can feel comfortable in, it all costs money. And so how do you see such things being funded?
Infrastructure. This is infrastructure, like everything else. And it just has to rise to the level of a commitment that the city is willing to actually make the resources happen, whether it's we've got a bond, we've got $40 million in bond money for paving. Well, maybe we should try and paint some lines on these streets when we pave them. So.
Do you think this funding, though, should be exclusively on the government's shoulders? Or, you know, is it up to you and other business developers to help make it happen?
Well, it's pretty hard for the private sector to get involved in redefining the profile of a road. I mean, the roads are city property, state property. I think the role of the private sector and of the public is to lobby for these things and to bring the pressure to bear where it needs to be brought to make sure these things happen.
When you're lobbying, though, it's like every project, you know, it's competing for limited funds.
I know.
You know, how much of a sure bet is it that this bicycling infrastructure will lure the minds that, you know, like, say, fill the knowledge district?
You know, revitalizing a city, there's no straight line. There's no scientific answers to these things. But we do know from looking at other places, from our experiences of being other places and going other places, that these things do work. I'm a big proponent of a streetcar, because we've seen streetcars. This is the new future of urban transit. But these are the types of moves, whether it be a streetcar or a bike lane, that really is the future of the way people are going to start moving around, I think.
So there's no scientific predictions, but I know that you're in, you know, conversations with the city. If you could maybe read the tea leaves for us, how likely do you think it'll be, you know, for the city to implement what you've been talking about, your ideal city of the future?
Well, I can say pretty much with some certainty that the pedestrian improvements around Kennedy Plaza will move forward. My dream of having a dedicated, isolated bike lane from Pawtucket to downtown Providence is a little bit further in the future. I'm very passionate about trying to continue making these types of changes in Providence, and we'll continue to do that and work with folks that are like-minded.
What's the biggest challenge you see to adopting this?
I think you brought up earlier, resources are very tough, and we're watching the national economy struggle. Our local economy is, you know, we need to really grow the city, and we need to, you know, improve our local economy and improve our environment. But things are happening. Again, like I said, there's going to be a lot of interesting work done on the infrastructure in the next 24 months. So hopefully there'll be some real bike-friendly moves happening along with the pedestrian. So
you know, you're a business guy. What we've been talking about, is this just, you know, just a bunch of bicycle blather for the clipless crowd?
No,
or
absolutely not.
Like that? Or is there actually a business opportunity here?
Well, we're certainly hoping that we'll see more cycling downtown. We're trying to get some bike rental operations going. We've had two different groups try and do it, but we think that if we can encourage more cycling, both for locals and for tourists and for visitors, it will just make, you know, it'll just enhance our image, enhance the way people move around. And, you know, I mean, it was, you know, when it was said, viewing the city from a bike is a just different view. It's so true. I mean, again, I saw Cathedral Square only because I was on a bike. I would never have seen otherwise. So.
Steve Durkee, Senior Associate and Director of Development with Cornish Associates, thank you so much.
Thanks.
Coming up, we'll hear the vision of a person tasked with creating the next bicycle master plan of Providence and learn about a bicycle program pioneered in Bogota, Colombia, that's returning to the capital city. You're listening to a special broadcast of Policy and Pino Bicycling Toward an Urban Renaissance. It's recorded in front of a wonderful audience here at the Providence Athenaeum. I'm Bradley Campbell. Keep listening.
How could I forget to mention the bicycle is a good invention? Make it up, making you my business. A funny buttercup, gotta live a forgiveness.
Welcome back to a special broadcast of Policy and Pino, Bicycling Toward an Urban Renaissance. Recording at the Providence Athenaeum, I'm Bradley Campbell. In the last two segments, we talked about bicycling Providence and then discussed its potential impact on economic development. Let's talk now about what's in the plans for the city. I'm joined by two people who are mapping out the future of Providence and bicycles. Gonzalo Cuervo is here. He's the Deputy Chief of Staff for Mayor Angel Taveras. He's the point man for neighborhood outreach in the city, and he helped launch a fascinating bicycle program that we'll introduce in just a bit. Gonzalo Cuervo, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
We're also joined by Bill DeSantis. He's Corporate Director of Bicycle Transportation at the private design firm VHB. He helped create the Blackstone River Bikeway, and he's now in charge of creating the next bicycle master plan for Providence. It's due out this summer. Bill DeSantis, it's good to have you here.
Thanks.
I'll start with the question to Bill. What is this bicycle master plan that you've been tasked with?
First of all, it really is an update of the original plan, which I believe we started in 2004. That plan included signing some bike routes into downtown Providence and, again, return routes back out to the surrounding communities. And it also included establishing some bike lanes on city streets like Broadway, Blackstone Boulevard. So that got done. But here we are 8 years later or 9 years later, and a lot has changed in the bike world. It seems everything changes almost on a daily basis. So it really was a time for an update. So the city's vision was to come up with a plan that in many ways was similar to many other bike plans. We will include recommendations for short-term, low-cost improvements that can be done very quickly, what we're calling midterm improvements that will cost a little more, and then finally the longer-term improvements that will probably need to be done with some of larger corridor or redevelopment projects.
So what are some of these specific elements that we're talking about?
Well, some of the elements will be looking at a lot of the projects that are going on and making sure we're coordinating and connecting with them, like the extension of the Blackstone River Bikeway coming down from the northeast. The Washington Pedestrian Bridge is being rehabbed to connect with the East Bay Bike Path. I know that we're working with the city and the DOT, are coordinating with the Wenasquatucket River Greenway folks to see if we can't extend the Greenway as an off-road path into the heart of downtown. And, of course, one of the main things we're working on diligently right now is the repaving program. We've been coordinating with the planning department and the DPW. I have been working very closely to make sure we can identify the streets that are in the paving program that can be marked, particularly with shared lane markings, or sharrows, everybody calls them, to be done this spring. So, again, looking at the low-cost improvements that can be done very, very, very quickly.
How are you going to address the plans that we talked about earlier, or the problem that we addressed earlier? You're going down, you're riding on your bicycle lane, and then, oh, geez, it just disappears, and you're stuck in heavy traffic.
Right. So we came up with an approach that is different, because right now the approach that most plans have is based on fear. I'm afraid to ride in traffic, so I don't ride my bike. I feel more comfortable if I had a separated facility. Our approach changed that a little bit. We said, well, we have a lot of data on city streets. We have how wide they are. We know how much traffic there is. And we know what type of street it is. Is it a neighborhood street? Is it a collector? Is it an arterial? So we said, why don't we gauge the streets to the cyclists? So we did basically took the geographic information system that the city has and ran it through a filter. So neighborhood streets that have low speed and people aren't going very fast and they have a low volume of traffic, that would be suitable for casual cyclists or teenagers that aren't driving yet, but know the basic traffic rules. Streets that might have a little bit higher volume of traffic or streets that have a bike lane, they would be suitable for adults that are fairly confident riding in traffic. All the way up to streets that have lots of traffic, multiple lanes, many complicated intersections, they would be suitable for cyclists that are very confident and very skilled. So we ran the city roadway network through that filter, and what we found was that we had islands of very bikeable neighborhood streets surrounded by streets with lots of traffic and higher speed. So we said, well, rather than look at developing a whole corridor, how do we make connections, short connections, key points between these islands of bikeable neighborhood and bikeable streets? So we're focusing our program on identifying those critical gaps in the network.
I'd like to bring into the conversation Gonzalo Cuervo. You represent the mayor. Why did the city commission a bicycle master plan?
Well, I think the mayor and many people in the administration understand the value and the importance of integrating bicycle transportation into the urban landscape. And the administration believes that this isn't just something that's important to these individuals who are avid cyclists, but also something that has an economic impact and a social impact in the city as well.
Yeah, so I guess could you expand on that? What does the city hope to get out of this?
Well, we want to improve the city's livability for everybody. And the ease of transportation and whatever mode of transportation you choose should be a critical piece of how livable the city is. If a person wants to get around on their bike, they should be able to get around easily and conveniently on their bike. If they want to walk, they should be able to walk.
Now, we mentioned Boston earlier in the evening, and for some time, Boston, our neighbors to the north, they're referred to by cycling publications as the worst city for bicycling. But in the last several years, they've improved dramatically. Boston is now ranked by Bicycling Magazine as a city on the rise. You know, Boston even cares so much about cycling, they actually pay someone to promote and expand it. That person is called the Bike Czar of Boston. She's a former U.S. Olympic cyclist. Her name is Nicole Friedman, and she said Boston improved by tackling the easiest things first.
You know, a lot of people said develop a master plan and work on a master plan and had a lot of giant construction projects. And we took a step back and we said, oh my gosh, from where we are, there's 1,000 small low-hanging fruit that we can pick off and we will have immediate impact. And, you know, to this day, mostly what we've done is just low-hanging fruit to get to where we are.
Bill, as an urban planner creating the Bicycle Master Plan, what are the low-hanging fruit in Providence?
Well, again, for Providence specifically, it was the paving program, which will be starting in a month or so. So we've been, again, working with the planning department and the DPW to make sure we can identify those streets that are going to be paved in a month or so, which that can be incorporated into our bike plan.
Gonzalo, we know that the city has a limited budget. We know from the national conversation that going green, it requires this upfront investment. How dedicated is the city to implementing such a plan?
The city is dedicated to working within the parameters of the plan as it's being developed. And as was mentioned, the repaving of 62 miles of roads over the next 2 years is an incredible opportunity to really take advantage of some of that low-hanging fruit. Nobody will disagree that the road conditions in the city of Providence are not ideal. And, you know, this is the reality of decades of deferred maintenance. And so the opportunity to pave 62 miles of streets in the city the size of Providence is really an unprecedented opportunity. And to integrate a lot of the thought that has gone into the designation of bike paths and to integrate that striping and signage into this repaving process is an important first step.
So where does it fit on the city? Say there's a hierarchy of priorities. Where's bicycling?
Well, the road paving is at the top of that list of priorities right now because it's such a massive project and it has so many implications, both economic and in terms of planning and development, and also because of the tight schedules that have to be kept.
Bill, you have experience working with politicians. Tell us what it would take, you know, to implement this plan. What is the process like?
Well, the city was clear that they didn't want the plan to be just about the engineering. We say that there are 5 E's to a bikeable community. There is the engineering, which is what we're doing right now for the resurfacing program. But there's also an education component, an encouragement, enforcement, and an evaluation. And I also am a cycling instructor like Matt, and I can tell you that I've personally experienced the difference that an education program can make in people's attitudes towards riding on using a bicycle for transportation. So the city definitely wants a program of education and encouragement that will create a culture where people will look at bicycling as being normal. As Matt said, we don't want to be thought of as abnormal. We just want it to be a choice of transportation that anyone can make. All people, all varieties of people using a bicycle for all varieties of transportation.
You're listening to Rhode Island Public Radio's special broadcast of Policy and Pino, Bicycling Toward an Urban Renaissance. I'm Bradley Campbell. Gonzalo Cuervo is the Deputy Chief of Staff for Providence Mayor Angel Taveras. Now, Gonzalo, you were born and raised here in Providence, but as we were having conversations, you told me that your parents come from Colombia. You're still in great contact with your family over there in the country. You visit when you can. Colombia is known in the transportation world as one of the most forward-thinking countries in terms of public transportation. Now, one of these programs that was founded in Bogota was brought to Providence last summer. It's called Ciclovia. Now, it had a soft launch, but it's back again this year, as Gonzalo says, with vigor. So I want to give you the chance to tell us about this program. What is Ciclovia?
So Ciclovia is a program that was started in Bogota. And what they do is they shut down about 10 to 12 miles of major streets on Sundays. And they shut them down completely to vehicular traffic. And what they do is they open them to bicycling and walkers. And they also have different focal points where they have maybe they have aerobics classes, yoga classes, and types of different activities that are offered free to the public. And the response has been amazing. And there are a lot of cities across the world that have modeled their own programs after Ciclovia. And so we wanted to try it out in Providence because we wanted to focus on the encouraging part also and get people to really look at bicycling not only as something that kids do, but also as something that can be a normal, you know, recreational activity or also just an integral part of people's lives.
So you did this last summer. Where did you block off the streets?
You know, when you talk about low-hanging fruit, we decided we were going to block off a half mile of Broad Street, which is a probably the busiest bus route in the state of Rhode Island, the number 11 bus from RIPTA. And we chose a Sunday morning, and we did it from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., and we shut down about a half-mile stretch. And at one end, there was a stage set up, and during the course of the day, they had a variety of aerobics classes, dance classes. And the rest of the street was divided into lanes. And there were also some vendors there. There were some folks who were brought on by the Bicycle and Pedestrian Commission members who were offering free workshops on how to maintain your bike and were actually providing servicing to a lot of the people who turned out that day. And it really changed people's perspective, not only about bicycling, but also about the street. Because if any of you have been to Broad Street, you know it's a really busy thoroughfare. And when you're standing in the middle of an empty street and you just have people riding their bikes or walking or participating in activities, you really change your perspective of the street. And you really notice many things about the streetscape that you wouldn't notice otherwise. And, you know, this is a neighborhood where that has economic challenges and a lot of people tend to be really in survival mode. And to be able to just, you know, walk out in the middle of the street that's usually packed with traffic and share it with your neighbors and your friends and see people enjoying themselves in a leisurely way was very impactful.
I think it's safe to say that most every resident in Providence, they want to see the city as this thriving place. You know, it's like everyone wants to hang their hat on this future of Providence that attracts and it keeps people through both economic activities, opportunities, a good quality of life. So we heard this hour from a cyclist who wants more people to join him on the streets, a developer who thinks that bike lanes could fill our city's knowledge districts. Bill, you're drawing the actual bicycle master plan for Providence. What is the role your bike plan could have on economic growth in the city?
The plan is not an end to itself. We want this to be a guide that the city will use as they go about their business of maintaining their facilities, upgrading their facilities, and then working with developers and institutions to improve the city. And it'll just be a constant resource to look to.
Now, when you envision a Providence, Bill, from, say, a generation from now, what do you see?
I see, again, a situation where people embrace cycling as just a normal thing, a part of their daily life, that they're not going to throw away their car keys, but certainly look at replacing some of their trips and some of their activities doing it by a bicycle.
Gonzalo, do you share Bill's vision for the future of Providence, or what do you see a generation from now?
Absolutely. I see a thriving city where people have a variety of transportation options, bicycling, ease of walking, a streetcar system, just a variety of things that increase the city's livability and really attract people to the city.
Gonzalo Cuervo is the Deputy Chief of Staff to Providence Mayor Angel Taveras. Bill DeSantis is an urban planner with the transportation design firm VHB. Gentlemen, thank you both for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks.
great.
My name's David Kellogg. I live here on College Hill. Been biking my whole life. I guess my question is directed primarily to Bill. You talked about the bicycle master plan. Is it out there that we can see in public what the proposed bike lanes would be, what the specifics would be of this plan?
Yes. We have a project website, www.vhb.com/bikeprovidence, and the proposed plans and roadway list is on that. It's a map of on the site.
Hi, I'm Margarita Pryor. I'm in Providence, Rhode Island, and I've been commuting by bike for a long time. You all talked about infrastructure, and I think that there's another piece of infrastructure, which is not just the roads, but people cannot be expected to be riding their bikes as a mode of transportation if we don't have grocery stores downtown and we don't have those sort of services that would allow you to get rid of your car. And I wonder whether that is being developed along with thinking about bike lanes per se.
Steve, do you want to take that?
A grocery store requires probably 10,000 people downtown, which we don't have yet. So maybe if we can build 1,000 more apartments, that'll be a good start. I think that's absolutely true. And we have the grocery stores are primarily on the east side and then far on the west side. Right now there are lots of residents in downtown that don't have cars. One of the things that's changed their world for sure is Zipcar, that you can rent a car by the hour. And people, the Zipcars downtown, the good news is we have them. The bad news is they're never there. So the other thing that I think is going to be a great moment is when we can have bike sharing. I was in Madison, Wisconsin last year, and they have a bike sharing program that's fantastic. And I think that there's been a study done by the city of Providence, and the decision was that we just aren't quite ready for it yet. We need a little bit more tourism, a couple of things. But that's going to be a big moment when we can actually have true bike sharing here.
I'm Betsy Kasdan. I also live on the east side, and I gave up my car about 6 months ago because I wasn't using it, because Providence is so walkable. I'm a pedestrian, not a cyclist. It's going to take a lot to get me on a bike in this traffic and living at the top of the hill on Hope Street. What I want to ask about is traffic signals. My experience as a pedestrian is that there are a large number of intersections where it is never safe to cross. Either the traffic is going one direction or people are turning right without stopping.
So we
don't have a traffic signal that stops all the traffic for people who are not in cars so that it's safe. And I wonder if that's being addressed at all in the planning that's going on.
Bill, if you want to take that question.
Well, technically there are advancements in the technology of traffic signals. But I believe that a big part of that is enforcement. I've been to New York City a couple of times in the last year or so, and I found that people don't jaywalk in New York City for a good reason. But they wait for the light. But when the pedestrian gets his light and you're crossing and somebody needs a vehicle needs to make a right turn, they wait for the pedestrians. So it's part of that culture. It doesn't work here because nobody's obeying the rules. Pedestrians are jaywalking, and drivers aren't stopping on a right on red. So that becomes down to, in my opinion, an enforcement issue. Yes, there's some technology we can use, but it's got to be enforcement. One of the other E's with the encouragement and the education.
I want to ride my bicycle. I want to ride my bike. I want to ride my bicycle. I want to ride it where I like.
I'd like to thank as well my other guests this hour, Matt Moritz, board president of Rhode Island Bicycle Coalition, and the senior associate Steve Durkee from Cornish Associates. So this has been a special broadcast of Policy and Pino, Bicycling Toward an Urban Renaissance. A special thanks to the Providence Athenaeum for hosting this event, especially Christina Bevilacqua. More thanks goes to Rhode Island Public Radio's news director, Catherine Welch, reporters Kristen Gourlay and Ian Donis. Additional thanks to the city spokesman, David Ortiz, and its director of sustainability, Sheila Dormady. Our sound man is Mike LaMaccia, producer Jim Moses, and a huge thanks goes to our general manager, Mr. Joe O'Connor. Thanks, of course, to you, our listeners. And also, please do not think this is the end of the conversation, for it continues online at ripr.org. I'm Bradley Campbell. On behalf of the folks at the Providence Athenaeum and this incredible audience here, this is Rhode Island Public Radio, Rhode Island's NPR. Thank you for listening.